This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. And this is so wild. I just have to share this with you real quickly, and then we'll continue picking up your phone calls here, as we've been doing for the last couple of hours. By the way, at 20 minutes past the hour, Talk Media News is going to drop by and update us on what's going on in the world. They've moved back an hour. But in any case, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is just wicked smart. I mean, this is a young woman who really, she understands America. She understands American politics. She understands the law. She is just wicked smart. She is one extraordinary woman. And therefore, the men over on Fox News are like, well, that's not possible, right? And not only that, she's Hispanic. I mean, you know, come on. She's smart? Are you seriously? So on Fox and Friends, Steve Doocy has this conversation with Mike Huckabee, Sarah's dad, you know, the hustler who pretended to run for president in order to, you know, raise his profile for his TV show. So anyhow, Steve Doocy says, somebody is writing her questions. And he's talking about when she was, you know, asking Michael Cohen questions. He says, I saw the questions at Michael Cohen, and I saw the questions at Wilbur Ross, and there are some forces behind her. I think there's a story here. And Mike Huckabee goes, well, very well could be. There have been some allegations she was almost like the Manchurian candidate, recruited, prepared, you know? Yeah, right. It's such a sad, frankly, tragic insight into the minds of these men over at Fox News. You know, I suppose I don't even need to elaborate. Let's just get to your phone calls here. Maine in Chicago. Hey, Maine, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Well, I was wanting to talk about how Trump wants to get rid of WTTW, Channel 11, Window to the World. He wants to cut America off from the rest of the world, so I guess we won't see the other political situations or whatever that's going on. I mean, the cut to stop WTTW would be, I mean, to me, a great loss, because if I don't have cable or nothing, and WTTW is the one station that I get outside of the United States, that speaks about what's going on in other parts of the world.
I don't know anything about this station, Maine. Is this a Chicago TV station?
Well, yeah, it's a public TV station.
Oh, okay.
And another thing I wanted to speak on, someone finally spoke on getting rid of the Electoral College. This lady, a politician, someone finally said the words.
Yep.
We need to get rid of the Electoral College. We've been talking about this for the longest.
We haven't had a Republican president elected by a majority of the voters since I think Bush Sr., maybe Reagan. I mean, you know, it's been 20, 30 years since we've had a Republican president who was legitimately elected. And frankly, I don't think that Reagan was legitimately elected. I don't think Nixon was. I think they both committed treason to win the White House, but that's a whole nother thing. And yeah, the Electoral College, it's a vestige of slavery. It was a gift to the slave states that Madison came up with in order to, you know, make them go along with being part of the new USA. And it gave them a little more power and a little more vote, because it was, you know, the whole premise of the Electoral College, even though it's a vote instead of for the House of Representatives, it was a vote for the presidency, but it was still based on the Three-Fifths Compromise. It was still based on all the slaves being counted, three-fifths of the slaves being counted toward the vote. And, you know, that's why the Electoral College in large part happened. It's an institution left over from slavery, just like the Second Amendment is, and, just like three-fifths was. I mean, that was taken out of the Constitution, or blown out of the Constitution, by the Civil War and the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. But it's time, I agree with you, it's time to take down the Electoral College. And we are, I think, 98 electoral votes away from doing away with this by having the states, I think it's fairvote.org, by having the states join and say, if the majority of the country If the national popular vote goes to a particular candidate, then all of our electoral votes will go to that candidate. And once that happens, there will no longer be an electoral college. And the only thing that's preventing it is a bunch of Republican red states that refuse to sign on to this thing. But most of the Democratic states, I think all of the Democratic states, Colorado, I believe, was the most recent one that just joined this program, which took it down below 100 votes still to get, right? So step by step, Maine, step by step. Thanks for the call. Matt in Austin, Texas. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Well, I wanted to talk about a couple of things, Tom. I'm past 80 years old, and I have seen fear and greed just go insane lately during this presidency. And then I think about, man, this is what has governed man and controlled him since the beginning of time. And that is that somebody who is greedy can get other people fearful, and then they can gain from it.
Yeah.
And I don't know anyone more fear-pushing than this current president. And I don't understand that people do not stand up against it. He does speeches, and MSNBC and CNN play and talk about him ad nauseum for the entire hour that they're on. And I have written, and I said, why don't you just take a couple of things that he says, put them on at the top of the show, let your group of talking heads talk about it for 5 minutes, and then get on to the news.
Yeah, I would like to see the whole group of talking heads thing go away, frankly. What is happening here, Matt, is that reality TV and reality radio, well, really reality TV. Reality TV is very cheap to produce. You know, reality TV came out of the writer's strike back a couple of decades ago. And,
exactly.
and what they have discovered on the TV side, because people are anxious to be guests on TV, they don't have to pay these people, right? And if they do become, quote, contributors, or some other word that means that they've signed an exclusive agreement with a particular network, then, you know, typically they're paid between $500 and $2,500 every time they show up on TV, which is chump change for these networks, you know, that are paying their anchors $5, $10, $20 million. So it's just a super cheap way to fill a whole lot of time, because it's much more expensive to have news bureaus around the world than actually do news reporting. And it just makes me crazy every time I see one of these panels thinking, you know, this is just, we're just burning through time so that we can sell advertising. And it's just it's the wrong way to program, frankly.
I think that Michelle Wolf was dead on during the correspondence dinner when she looked out and said, oh, you've never been happier, have you, to the left-wing reporters, because you're making more money than you've ever. And it's just greed. And the idea that these people that are talking ad nauseum about the fact that Trump is no good are doing nothing but putting him on. He's the most insane egomaniac I have ever seen in my 80 years or 65 years since I've been paying attention.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't recognize and stop it.
Yeah.
So I wish other people, I wrote a letter, of course I got nothing back, but I wish other people, if more and more people would write and say, get this guy off the air.
Yeah.
To both MSNBC and CNN, that would be great.
These television networks, you know, Les Moonves famously said during his investor call, you know, Donald Trump may be bad for America, but he's great for CBS. Keep it up, Donald. You know, we're making money hand over fist. And they gave him $2 billion worth of free publicity leading up to the election of 2016. And it looks to me like they are doing it all over again. They've already started, and you know, it's spectacle. Trump is spectacle, and you know, in this, if it bleeds, it leads era of so-called news, now spectacle is the number one product that they're selling, and so he provides it. They go with it, and I'm with you, Matt. And I've written op-eds about, in fact, I wrote an op-ed specifically about this conversation we're having about 3 or 4 months ago, and I was frankly surprised how far it didn't go. I thought it would stir up, you know, some controversy. Matt, thanks for the call, and keep spreading the good word. It's 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In about 4 minutes, we're going to check in with Talk Media News, find out what's going on in the world today. And in the meantime, it's Anything Goes Friday. And I'm wrong about Talk Media News. He will be on 30 minutes from now, exactly a half hour from this moment. Carrie in New Windsor, New York. Hey, Carrie, what's on your mind today?
Hello, happy Women's History Month.
There you go. Back at you, Carrie.
Yay. Let me get somewhere quieter for a second. I'm multitasking. I've been so busy. I haven't been able to listen to your show almost all month. So, anyway, I have a, let's see, Women's History Month fact to share and a question.
Okay.
The fact is that women have not been allowed to vote for 100 years yet. We got the right to vote in 1920. Right. And who knows if we really still are, you know, technically allowed to vote. I know brown-skinned people got the right to vote 50 years earlier in 1870. They didn't really get to vote, but they got the right to vote.
It wasn't people, so, you know, it was just men, yes.
Exactly, just men. People, men of color got the right to vote in 1870 and women in 1920. So with those deballed voting machines, I don't see a woman becoming president for another 50 years, I guess. I guess after, you know, let's see, 2008 was Obama, so whatever, I can't really do the math right now exactly what 50 years from then, like, the next real election will be or whatever, but yeah, so, and then my question is, I remember you guys, I did get to listen on International Women's Day, and there was a mention of it because a couple of your staff members, you had said, were debating all day as to whether or not it was called, well, let me see, March 8th, what is it, International Women's Day versus International Working Women's Day.
Right. It has been both by different groups.
Yeah. So I remember calling in last year being like, Happy International Working Women's Day. And so I have just been, like, kind of programmed, like, because of, like, this other radio station that I listen to, like, that's what they call it. But I've since, like, figured out that, I guess, the socialist people, like the Answer Coalition, you know, all those guys, you know, called it, you know, put in the word worker. But I prefer, you know, just because it's shorter.
You know, what's remarkable, Carrie, is how many of our holidays started out as very different things. You know, May Day was celebrating workers. It was the International Workers' Day. The Harriet Beecher Stowe, if I'm remembering correctly, the author of, it's not the Star-Spangled Banner, it's America the Beautiful, I think, one or the other. In any case, Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote this poem about how, you know, we women will no longer send our children off to fight in your wars. And she was the founder of Mother's Day, and it was Mother's Day for Peace. It was an anti-war day, and now it's turned into a greeting card holiday, and we've completely forgotten about Harriet. And, you know, we've got numerous holidays that really started out celebrating average working people or celebrating women or celebrating peace, and now they've been sanitized and turned into basically, you know, opportunities to have a lesson plan in an elementary school, and that's pretty much it.
Mm. So what do you think we could do different so we could get a woman president sooner? Because, you know, clearly I remember last time I called in, you were like, well, we almost got Hillary. But, you know, again, with those feeble voting machines, you know.
I think we have a really good chance this time, if not the presidency, the vice presidency. And, I mean, you've got some very well-qualified women on the Democratic side right now. And, in fact, I think all of them are very well-qualified. I think some of them have much better chances than others, but we've got an extraordinary field. So I'm hopeful that it's coming, Carrie, because frankly, I think women govern better than men. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Anything Goes Friday. Luke Vargas will be with us in 30 minutes. My apologies for giving you the wrong time on the Talk Media News thing. Tom in Seal Beach, California. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Well, I'd just like to remind people that we're all bozos on this bus.
Yes, you and the Fire Sign Theater.
Yes. I was calling because I'd like religious believers to recognize, at least intellectually, that they're probably wrong. You know, the most popular religion worldwide is Christianity, but only about a third of the population are Christians. So that means two-thirds of the population is believing something.
Of the world?
Of the world. If we assume that the largest population group has it right, then two-thirds of the people have it wrong. Now, if we look at just the U.S., where nearly three-fourths of the people claim to be Christians, that lumps together, you know, Protestants, Catholics, Mormons. So I can't.
Sure. What's your point, Tom? Where are you going with this?
Well, all three of those can't be right. So
sure.
There's
one exception here that I think you're missing, and that is, you know, people, frankly, like me, who claim a religion. I call myself a Christian because I love the Bible. I grew up with the Bible. When I engage in Christian ritual, I feel good. I believe that Jesus was, you know, a brilliant prophet who said really important things. He was the original socialist and a great role model in many ways. And Matthew 25 has been in many parts of my life kind of a template for my life. And yet, at the same time, intellectually, I know that it's almost a certainty that in my mind. And I'm not saying that anybody who disagrees with me is wrong. I'm simply saying for myself that the idea that he was born of a virgin, that's something that goes back to Zoroastrianism. That was kind of inserted into Christianity. The idea that he rose from the dead, again, that goes back, you know, to ancient old religions, and I think was inserted into Christianity. So, you know, most Christian churches would throw me out and say I wasn't a Christian because I'm not buying 100% of their doxology and of their theology, but I still call myself a Christian. And I think that there's a lot of people like me out there who pray every day, who have a deep sense of spirituality. I do both. And who have had religious experiences in their lives that convince them that there's something very real and something very big out there that is much bigger than all of us, that is the intelligence that is the entire universe, and that we're some little tiny speck of. And I've absolutely had those experiences on multiple occasions in my life. And yet, I don't fit into any of those neat little categories, Tom.
Well, my point is that whatever your religious beliefs are, and personally, I believe that the world would be a much better place if people followed the teachings of Jesus. I don't have to believe he was a god to say that.
Yeah, my point.
But most people have to be wrong mathematically, and to be basing things like governance on what has to be, by most people, a wrong belief. Doesn't make any sense to me. I understand that some people get, you know, a lot of comfort from it, and I have no problem with that.
Well, this is why the founders twice in our Constitution wrote into the Constitution that we don't have a state religion, that there is a to paraphrase Jefferson, a letter that Jefferson wrote much later, or maybe it was Madison, a wall of separation between church and state. And that there shall be no religious test for office. I mean, we were not created as a Christian country. When Jefferson wrote the first draft of the Declaration of Independence, John Adams edited it along with Ben Franklin, although Franklin came a few days later. And you could see this over at the National Archives, I believe. In the first iteration of that editing, Jefferson had written the laws of nature's God, right? And because he was a deist, he really believed that nature was a reflection of the divinity that created everything. He believed that something created the universe and then stepped back and let the laws of nature run everything from that point forward. And John Adams was a fundamentalist Christian. He was very conservative. And a terrible president as a consequence of it, and he scratched that out and he wrote in the Christian God, and then Jefferson gets it back and he scratches that out again and writes in nature's God. I mean, this is a debate that literally goes back to the founding of the Republic, and it was decided. It was decided unambiguously by the people who founded this country, and we've had this movement. In the United States, it reared its ugly head in the 1830s. It did it again in the 1880s. with these huge kind of, you know, end of times movements and waves of evangelical Christianity, and then again in the 1920s, and then again in the 1970s and the 1980s, although the one in the 70s and 80s morphed into this cult thing of the mega churches and the Jim Bakers and the Jimmy Swaggarts and all these guys who developed these massive cult followings, and then, you know, showed us all the Jerry Falwells and showed us all that they have feet of clay just like all the rest of us human beings here, but it's still rolling. And now you got Mike Pompeo openly making policy based on his belief that the world has to end in Israel.
Well, I don't know how you decide which religion to believe, and how do you know that the one that you pick isn't like Heaven's Gate with the 38 suicides waiting
yeah.
for the UFO?
Well, and that's why I encourage a healthy skepticism, but do what feels right. Tom, I don't have an answer to that one. Tom, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us there in Seal Beach, California. We'll be back. It's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
TGIF, Juma Mubarak, Shabbat Shalom. It's Friday. We'll be back with your calls at Anything Goes Friday. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. You know how Devin Nunes is suing now the Twitter account Devin Nunes' cow? It turns out there's a whole story here about Devin Nunes' cow, or about his family farm. Ryan Lizza wrote an extraordinary piece. It's 14 pages long. I just printed it out over at Esquire magazine, esquire.com, titled Devin Nunes' Family Farm is Hiding a Politically Explosive Secret. It says, Representative Devin Nunes is head of the House Intelligence Committee, one of President Trump's biggest defenders. For years, he's spun himself as a straight talker whose no BS values are rooted in his family's California dairy farm. So why did his parents and brother cover their tracks after quietly moving the farm to Iowa? Are they hiding something politically explosive? On the ground in Iowa, Esquire searched for the truth and discovered a lot of paranoia and hypocrisy. Just a little heads up. Angie in Grants Pass, Oregon. Hey, Angie, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
I'd like to add to your last Sermon on the Mount, practicing staying present and gratitude are very powerful, and I don't care to give them a name. It's not important to me. I know they work.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I wanted to ask you on the subject of statute of limitations and crimes and all. A couple of weeks ago, you were talking about kidnapping and child abuse, and the caller said trafficking, and I would add conspiracy. What about those? Do they have a statute of limitations?
I don't know.
Children being separated from their parents?
It'll vary from state to state, Angie, and kidnapping is a federal felony. I don't know about any of the other things that you've talked about. Or kidnapping and transporting a person across the state line is a federal felony. And clearly the Trump administration has done that. I'm not the person to ask that question.
They discuss things. Is that conspiracy? I mean, this isn't an accident what they did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it would be conspiracy. It absolutely would. I think that I frankly doubt that anybody in this administration is going to be held to account in this political cycle. But I think it's entirely possible that if they're not held to account in the next political cycle, then history will hold them to account. We're going to look back on this as these children grow up and start telling their stories. As adults, we're going to look back on this the way that we look back on the Japanese internment camps, or worse, the way we look back on slavery, and just be humiliated by the fact that this was done by our own country. This was done in some cases by our own ancestors. It's just a terrible, terrible crime that these guys are doing. Angie, thank you for the call. Sarah in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Sarah, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Remember several years ago, before cellular phone had cameras on it, there was this term, suicide by cop.
Sure.
And I was wondering the other day if what's going on now with the shooting of minority people was actually going on back then, but because we didn't have cameras to document anything, nothing has changed.
Oh, I absolutely believe that, Sarah. I think that, I think that the cell phone cameras have been the disruptive technology that has probably slowed down the rate at which cops are killing unarmed black people, although certainly it has not come to a halt.
Yeah, because, you know, and I was sitting, remember, every year all the time, suicide by cop. He wanted us to kill him. Well, now we see with the cameras that that might not necessarily have been what's going on. Even with the beatings of people when they're in the jail and they're handcuffed to a chair or they handcuffed to the back and they end up shooting themselves in the mouth. You know, thank God for the camera phones.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, sometimes it's just logic. I mean, there was that one guy in the jail, I think it was Florida, I could be wrong, a couple of years ago, who apparently in jail shot himself twice, right? I mean, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, come on, you know, at least try a credible lie. Sarah, thank you. Thank you. Spot on. Don in Weldon, California. Don, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. It's wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you, Don.
I was listening to you talk to the gentleman about church and how people kind of follow leaders just merely because they are leaders. And it reminded me of something I heard on the radio, I think, yesterday, that Trump is concerned that colleges are not letting conservative people, you know, voice their opinions. And that colleges are making liberal people just because that's what they're told in college. What I think is true is that colleges give kids a chance to think for themselves. And when you give people a chance to think for themselves, they think liberally
with open minds. Yeah, they call themselves liberals. Yeah, I agree.
Right. Yeah. So I think that just the mere fact of going to college gives a person a chance to think for themselves.
It's almost like it's like an evolutionary process, Don. You know, you start out being a conservative, believing in hierarchy and a patriarchy and authority and all the mythology of Fox News. And then you go off to college and you discover that there's this whole world and there's history and there's philosophy and critical thinking, and you become a liberal, and then you graduate with a degree that allows you to make a lot of money. And as your net worth starts going into seven and eight figures and you start being worth millions or tens of millions of dollars, suddenly you become a conservative again. Because, hey, the conservatives are all about, you know, keeping the taxes down.
That's very true.
It's just very strange. It's just very strange. Don, thanks.
Could I add one more little thing?
Sure.
I'm a hospice nurse in Southern California, and we take care of people, obviously, who are dying.
That is God's work.
And sometimes we take care of people, thank you. We take care of people who come out of the hospital very sick. And then they tend to get better because they're getting so much care and they see nurses a couple times a week. And so we catch things before they get worse.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need a lot more home health. We could take care of people, especially elderly people that can't get to the doctor. Just the simplest things that we could catch early just by seeing people at home. And we could save a lot of money and people could have far better lives.
You don't just save more money, you also prevent the spread of hospital-acquired infections like C. diff and some of those other things. My very best friend, went in for heart ablation surgery, you know, where they stop the atrial fibrillation by burning a little bit of the heart away. And they do this by running an electrode up through your vein, you know, or your artery, rather, from your leg, the inside of your leg. And the surgeon screwed it up, and he lost like 8 units of blood, and his leg swelled up to twice the normal size and ended up in the hospital. Long story. I mean, this went on for about a week and a half. They punched two holes in his artery or his vein. Finally, they got it fixed, and finally a plastic surgeon got in to close the wound because it got infected. He went home. It got infected. He came back. It's just this insane thing. And they were going to send him home, but he's on this, you know, IV antibiotics. And they were like, well, we've got to have a nurse come to your house to administer the antibiotics. And they couldn't, he had to stay in the hospital for an extra 3 days because they couldn't find a nurse.
Right.
you know, because he's in New York City and there's some kind of shortage or something, you know, or they took time to organize it or whatever. That's crazy. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Home care is the best care. And like I said, you're not exposed to these hospital-acquired infections, which are getting really, really nasty out there. Don, thanks so much for the call, and good on you for being a hospice worker. That is such, my father went through this, and it is so, it is just so good. It is such good stuff. Thank you, Don. Arthur in Malden, Massachusetts. Hey, Arthur, what's up?
Hello, Tom. As a veteran of the Iraq War, I first want to say thank you for your public service, keeping me informed.
Thank you for your service to your country, Arthur. Our country.
I'm a little nervous. I wanted to recommend a movie that I saw on Netflix. It's incredible, called 22 July.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that.
I wanted to mention it to you because last week there was the New Zealand shooting that happened with the white supremacist killing 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
So this story is a true story, directed by Paul Greengrass of The Bourne Ultimatum and United 93 about the 9/11 plane attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is about a white supremacist who shoots up Norway. This is a true story that
Anders Breivik?
Back in 2011, sorry?
Anders Breivik?
It might be. I'm not. Yeah.
He's the guy who
killed
70 people in Norway, you know, because they were liberals.
Right. Because they were, I think, students on an island.
Yep. It was a summer camp that was put on by a political organization that was politically progressive.
Exactly. It goes into the police, the actual shooting first, then the police catching the shooter, the aftermath, how the judicial system handles the shooter,
right,
and his lawyer's perspective.
Yeah, it wasn't just the shooter, too. He tried to blow up one of the government buildings as well, didn't he?
Yes, well, he did blow up a building. That's the start of the movie, at least.
Yeah.
So it takes the point of view of also one of the victims hurt by the shooting.
Yeah.
The captured shooter's perspective is very scary. It's listening to him espouse this white supremacist doctrine makes the skin crawl.
And anyway, he's the guy who inspired the guy in New Zealand.
Well, that may be true.
No, I'm telling you, it is true. He left a 1,000-page manifesto, Breivik, and the guy in New Zealand quotes it and references it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic movie, and I recommend it to you.
July 22, is that the name again, Arthur?
22 July.
22 July on Netflix, did you say?
Yes, Netflix.
Okay, I'll check it out. Arthur, thank you for the call, and thanks for the suggestion, and thanks for watching us on YouTube. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes and change past the hour. We are going to, in 4 minutes, check in with Luke Vargas with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world. And so stick around. Interesting day we're having here.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Stay tuned. In 4 minutes, Luke Vargas will be here from New York City with Talk Media News. Richard in Naples, Florida, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Well, good afternoon, Tom. It's such a good thing that I have you to watch on TV. It's heartwarming.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate your being there. Please stay on.
Thank
Listen,
you.
The reason I'm calling is that since it's open Friday, and I guess I don't have to have listened to all the rest of the stuff this morning, I had to do some work. I listened to The View this morning, and they had Peter Buttigieg, mayor of Indianapolis, I think it is.
South Bend.
South Bend, Indiana, that's right. And I was very encouraged by him.
He's a genius, this guy. He is amazing.
He wrote Scholar, but it just made me feel like I felt when I first tuned in to Barack Obama. I really feel like we have a sensible person here who could carry us forward. And one of his messages was that instead of calling it democratic socialism, which raises all kinds of emotions in people unnecessarily, why not democratic democracy?
Yeah.
Why not? But the basic idea, because I heard you speaking, our gentleman was speaking about Jesus's philosophy, and certainly we, I think, all progressives see the value in that. But his idea is that he's a strong religious person, but he sees himself as informed by his religion, but not wanting to say that everybody has to be like him.
Yep.
He wants to listen to all folks. It's his idea that he would be president of the entire nation. And I'm remembering what you talked about yesterday, reading from a book that, you know, when you have a 6 children in school and 4 of them vote to play tag and the other 2 vote to play, say, hide and seek, you don't necessarily have to simply say, well, it's going to be one or the other. You know, you have to be aware of other people's views and work with them. And that's what I think he is doing. And I think he has the best chance of beating Trump, mostly because his view is that you don't take on this job by way of looking at it as a way to topple Trump.
Yeah.
Trump, because he's very clear
that he's about fixing America. And this is not only is he brilliant and young, I mean, he's still in his 30s, yeah, as I recall, but
exactly.
he's also a married gay man. This is the first openly gay candidate to be a nominee for president of the United States. Actually, he's not a nominee, but to even be in a primary, yeah, for president of the United States, yeah, from either party. And that in and of itself is groundbreaking. But I would vote for Pete Buttigieg in a minute. This is not an endorsement.
Well,
but if he was the nominee of my party, I would walk over hot coals for him.
And you know, there was a lady just a little while ago that talked about, when are we going to have a first woman president? And your response was, yes, I, you know, it's about time you think that women rule, or not rule, but women govern better than men, generally. And, you know, we possibly have to look at that. And a gay person, I would think, has views that might be, you know, more broad.
Well, being a minority, he has to have had a life experience that informs him about the need for compassion. And yes, I am concerned about men generally governing because they're typically testosterone poisoned. Richard, thank you for the call. We'll be back. So let's check in with Luke Vargas and find out what's going on in the world today. This report from Talk Media News brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Loving What You Do, the new book from Ellen Ratner. And Luke, I'm sorry, I haven't yet opened your, there it is right there. Let me just, okay, President Trump has tweeted, I have a question for you. He's now withdrawing new sanctions on North Korea. Now, Sarah Sanders just came out and said, well, he still likes Kim. The definition of treason is giving aid and comfort to an enemy during time of war. To the best of my knowledge, there's only one country that we're actually in a state of war with right now, and that's North Korea. I'm scratching my head here, Luke. What's going on?
This has been really difficult to understand. Yesterday, we were getting invitations from the National Security Council to come to the executive office building so that they could explain to reporters just how crucial it was that North Korea, these two Chinese shipping companies who have been helping North Korea evade sanctions, get punished for this. Treasury really thought this was crucial to closing loopholes in the sanctions regime and maintaining pressure on North Korea. Only for several hours ago, Trump to tweet, yeah, it was announced yesterday by the Treasury, blah, 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 but I am ordering actually that we withdraw these additional sanctions, end quote. I mean, it was just like out of nowhere, he basically undid this, raising tons of questions about whether there's a big rupture within the administration, that the Treasury Department is doing things without the okay of the White House, or if Trump just had a change of heart, and if so, what prompted it? Did he get some sort of message back from North Korea after the sanctions were sort of teased, and he wants to change his mind here, or is this just an absolute mess and there's just no policy whatsoever? I would point out it's just odd to begin with, because what the U.S. is alleging here, if you look at the statistical background, is that there's massive violations of the sanctions regime. For instance, there were 263 tanker ships full of petroleum that illegally docked at North Korean ports last year after collecting oil on the high seas. This is illegal. It's a violation of the U.S. and international sanctions on North Korea. And yet, our way of patching this up is two tiny slap-on-the-wrist sanctions against Chinese international shipping companies that don't really have money overseas or aren't going to be affected by a travel ban. So right. There's just sort of a this.
It raises an interesting question. You know,
lack of clarity on so many fronts. Yeah.
If Trump is going easy on Putin because either A, Putin's got the goods on him and he's afraid of him, or B, which I think is more likely, frankly, he wants to build a Trump Tower in Moscow and it'll be worth, to quote Michael Cohen, hundreds of millions of dollars to Trump. But, you know, he's got a secondary agenda there that is driving foreign policy with regard to Russia. Is it possible that he has a secondary agenda that's driving policy with regard to North Korea? Now, that wouldn't be that he wants to build a Trump Tower there. But Kim runs one of the world's most efficient hacking operations. And it's entirely possible that Kim knows, you know, all the secrets about Trump, knows everything. And has been able to, you know, pull all this stuff out. Maybe in one of his sit-downs with Trump, he just said, hey, Donald, yeah, wouldn't it be a shame if people learned about X, Y, or Z? I mean, is it possible that Kim is blackmailing Donald?
I think it would be unwise for me to wander into too much speculation there.
Okay.
But I will say that I clearly think we need to consider North Korea sanctions in the broader context of the China trade talks. I mean, that really is where, if your administration is trying to pretend that you're closing up sanctions gaps that China is exploiting, and the scale of that those sanctions violations is massive in this case,
right,
and yet your professed big, you know, response is pretty weak sanctions against entities that aren't really going to be negatively affected here, and that China's probably going to interpret as a kind of gesture in the grand scheme of things, that hey, you could have made a big deal out of this, and instead you sort of you tried to score some political points, but you didn't really cause us any harm. I wonder, you know, I think we have to see linkages between an easing of pressure on North Korea, despite all of their violations of the sanctions, and you know, and possibly trying to appease China or induce them to a good trade deal. But and I will just point out, it's just, I think, sort of all the more galling to people who are trying to, you know, properly triage what we should be focusing on. The fact that we've got North Korea violating sanctions and here being let off the hook and being told that the U.S. president likes their oppressive leader, and on the same day the U.S. tightening new sanctions on Iran, even as it comes out that there is no evidence they're working towards nuclear weapons, you know, I just think the contradictions there are difficult to stomach and just really difficult to make sense of.
Amen. Meanwhile, Trump has announced that we're recognizing Israel's occupation of the Golan Heights now as basically acquired territory, sort of the way we acquired Texas from or Arizona from Mexico during the Mexican-American War. This was supposed to be something that we would negotiate with, wasn't this?
Yeah, it doesn't change any of the realities on the ground, but I think it dispenses with any notion of non-interference in these Israeli elections. We're really trying to push Bibi over the top and distract from new scandals that keep erupting domestically. So
yeah, and it may well work. It may well work.
Yeah.
Luke Vargas, Chief Foreign Correspondent for Talk Media News. Check out his 2-minute podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. Thanks so much for being with us this week. I hope you have a wonderful, safe, extraordinary weekend. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Democracy requires all of us. That includes you. So please, get out there, get active, do something, right? Help wake people up. Tag, you're it. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.